Garrett Edelstein here, your celeb expert and your celeb savant. Celeb Savant is a weekly entertainment show. We have long-form career retrospective type interviews with celebrities, singers, actors, and industry experts. On this episode of Celeb Savant, I'll be speaking to Umi Nawaz. He's an artist and composer from North London. He has worked as a session drummer in various theatre groups and in the function band, the Sonic Pilots. He currently works part-time at Cherry Red Records. Coming up, Umi Nawaz from Cherry Red Records on Celeb Savant. I'm going to be speaking to Umi Nawaz from Cherry Red Records. Now, as you guys know, I like to speak to the people behind the scenes of getting the artists to us as the listening audience. And Umi is one of those people. So Umi, can you explain to us what your role at Cherry Red is?
So my role currently is I'm working on a database which compiles all the songs that we own outright in terms of rights that we can use for sync, basically. So I'm just collating all the songs, putting them into the database with the MP3s and stuff like that, and that'll be used, well, that is being used to push for sync. So we'll be using those songs on that database, will be pitched for use in films and TV and video games, such.
For those listeners who do not know what sync is, can you explain exactly what that is?
Yes, it's simple. It's a weird term, but it is just essentially just getting music into film and TV and video games, adverts and stuff like that. Yeah, so essentially a music, so say a production's happening, any kind of production that requires music, they'll usually have a music supervisor on board, and those people will be responsible for sourcing music. So they'll get, you know, they'll have a brief of what kind of music they need for the production, and the music supervisor will use that, you know, information to find music essentially, and they'll usually come to record labels to do that. So I personally, I'm not doing the pitching. We already, long before I started there is a sync department. And so I'm just helping them out, really.
So as a person watching a movie or a television show or an advertisement, we just think, okay, cool. Boom, boom, bam, wham, bam, bang. There's the advert, there's the movie, there's the television show. Then easy peasy, there's a song on. It's quite a lengthy process to get that song onto that show, movie, or advert, correct?
It depends, because what I'm working on, it can be more difficult. Every song is a different animal. Every song is a different case. Let's say it like that. And every production is obviously a different case. But what my job essentially is collecting songs which... So when you're acquiring one of these songs for your production, you're looking at publishing rights and master rights. So you want to clear both of those. And the thing about those rights is they could belong to several different people. If there's five different songwriters on a song, the publishing is shared between all those songwriters. And so clearing a song for your use in your film, your production, it's going to take clearing all of those writers, all of those people who have rights on it. It's going to take them to agree to it, and so the more songwriters you have, or the more the rights split up, I think that's what makes it a very lengthy process. That can be what makes it difficult, and even sometimes impossible. If you got 99% cleared and 1% isn't happy with it, it's not happening. So essentially what my job is to collate all the songs in which Cherry Red own 100% of the publishing rights and 100% of the master rights. And we call that, that's called in I guess in the industry, it's called one stop. So you us. Yeah. And that's one stop basically. And you don't have to go any further than that. Once we've said, yep, that's good, we're happy with that, then you don't have to go much further. So when you say is it a difficult process, I think yes, but what I've been told essentially is that more music supervisors are looking for more one-stop stuff because of that difficulty, essentially.
The songs that are all one-stop at Cherry Red, does that mean that the artists fully recorded the songs, with the Cherry Red owning the masters and all the elements around it? Or how does it make it one stop for Cherry Red?
It's different for every song. Depending, Cherry Red don't have too many original recordings. A lot of these recordings are from acquisitions. So you would buy out, you know, maybe another record label has done these deals in the past, and they might have, you know, in their contract owned all the rights for it, or the publishing rights and the master rights. And then once we've acquired it from them, we take those rights from them 100%. So it all works in different ways.
Okay.
Yeah. Every song is a different case, essentially. There are other kind of aspects to it as well, which aren't, you know, you don't necessarily need to own them. There's stuff like licensing, which I'm not an expert on in any way,
yeah.
Licensing, but I know that, you know, you can license a song a recording, and as part of the contract or part of the deal is that, you know, you have a it's non-exclusive, so you can do whatever you like with it, and you know, once you, like, for the period that you own it. So if I license a song not with non-exclusive rights for 7 years off of you, and yeah. But I also own your publishing,
yeah,
then and I buy your publishing and I license a song, essentially for that 7 years it'll be one stop, because we have sort of carte blanche to do what we want with it until the license expires.
We've seen over the last few years certain artists, like big artists like Bruce Springsteen and so forth, selling their publishing rights to a label for however million, hundred millions of dollars. Then they am I correct in my understanding that if Movie A would like to use a Bruce Springsteen song, then it would become one stop with that potential label. Am I correct in my understanding?
If the same label also owns the master recording, the rights to the recording as well.
Okay. Okay.
Which is the master rights. Yeah. So something like that. I'm assuming they would. I don't know too much about the Springsteen deal, but I'm assuming, yeah, whoever owned the recordings picked up the publishing, and then that, now that would be one stop. And so going forward for those songs, unless Bruce still owns his master's recording rights, going forward, if they wanted to put Bruce Springsteen's song in a advert or something, then that would be their decision fully.
Tell us a little bit more about your other role at Cherry Red, being a press officer. Tell us more about that role.
It's basically how it worked for me was every month we would put out, As you probably noticed, every month we put out a whole list of releases. Under Cherry Red, there's a lot of sub-labels, and they're all run by different people. Some of them, most of them work externally, basically. So, different labels for each genre. We have metal, we have soul, reggae. It sort of spans the board, pop. And so from there, you know, every month there'll be a whole list of releases that get put out.
Yeah.
And what the press department, essentially, what we would do is we would sort of case-by-case basis, depending on, you know, where the rights have come from. Some of the releases were stuff that Cherry Red owned outright. Some of them were licensed. Our job was to sort of get in touch with the artists a lot of the time. I mean, we do marketing for everything, but I think with the press side, what we would do is try and get reviews essentially in publications and radio play. Well, radio play came under our umbrella, but our main job was press. And so what that entails is essentially all it is linking the publications with either the music or with the artist. So, okay, you know, we got a lot of publications all over the world. So you got like classic rock and Viva La Rock and all this stuff. We mainly deal with rock magazines and stuff like that, metal and stuff like that. So when, you know, we, as you know, we put out our schedule and we try and pitch certain releases to different magazines, saying, hey, can you review this? We can send you X, Y, and Z. We weren't sending them money or anything. They were very, the guy I worked for, he had a lot of integrity. He never wanted to buy a review ever. He said they'd work on their own merit. So we would, pitch it to the publication, say, hey, would you review this? And some of them a lot easier than others, some of them a bit more difficult, but we're always willing to send as much materials as we can. And then other half was interviews and sort of that kind of marketing. And so we would go through those releases and look at right, who can we track down from these releases, from the bands, from the artists, who can we track down, get in touch with, are they willing to do interviews, who's interested in interviewing them, and then just linking them up and just making sure everything went smooth, really.
You mentioned without naming, as mentioned before. So you mean to say that other institutions would pay for reviews to happen?
I wouldn't even allege that at all. I think the game, from what I know, I only did it for a few years. Yeah. And from what I know, or from what I've heard, it used to be a bit of a different game back in the day, maybe, okay, you know, 20, 30 years ago. I think you always want to make friends with these people. And, you know, you do them favors and they do favors, they help you out. And, you know, that kind of thing is it's all building relationships with these people. So, you know, I doubt in many cases money changed hands. But back in the day, I can't speak for how people got reviews or radio plays. Yeah. I've heard stories of, you know, of someone, you know, turning up to an office with a bag of drugs or something. You know, this kind of thing happens in this industry. You never know, but I would never allege that anyone did that or any record label operates that way.
Tell me about what it's like interacting with the artists, you know, organizing these interviews, again, without naming anyone. Is it a fun? Are they divas? You know, what is it like from your side interacting with those people?
I have to say, in all honesty, interacting with the artists was my favorite part of the job.
Oh, cool.
Honestly, like, I don't think I spoke to a single artist that was a diva. And some of them are a little bit preoccupied, as in, you know, you're kind of looking for a straight answer and they're not able to give it to you. But I always put that down as part of the fun and part of what an artist is supposed to be. They're not, it's our job to, you know, rein them in and sort of get them on track. And it's not their job to do that. It's their job. And so it was always a bit of you just never know what you're going to get. And, you know, you have ideas about what people are like, and then you start emailing them, start chatting to them, and they're just always very nice, usually very nice. So you got the thing about with ours, with what we do, and I know a lot of other record labels do this as well, when you're licensing it, when you license a release or license, you know, an album or something like that for a release, there are various different contracts in place, all to do with rights again. And some artists, if we had licensed some of their stuff, then they wouldn't be interested in any promotion because they weren't making anything off it. Or, you know, a lot of, I wouldn't just say that because they weren't making anything off it. I'd say it wasn't in their best interest to be promoting old stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of them are working on new stuff, and they say, that's in the past, I've done that, you know, and that's fine. And then some of them were completely opposite. You know, you'd be re-releasing an old album, and they'd be really ecstatic about it, and they'd be like, yeah, I love doing this, this was great, I can't wait, I'll talk about this, people want to talk about it, let's talk about it. So it was it's just a mixed bag always, really. I think that was the most fun, that was the most interesting part to me, because it was quite unpredictable, and when you did get something and you did get a good lead or like a very cooperative artist, then it, you know, it was just made the job a joy.
For those listeners who don't know, Cherry Red is, and Umi, please correct me, is a label that releases more old, not necessarily new releases of artists, but they re-release older stuff or anniversary type CDs, if it's 30th or 40th anniversary CDs. Am I correct in my understanding?
Yeah, that would be correct. The output always changes. I mean, when the company started, they weren't putting out older releases and stuff like that, reissues. They were putting out new stuff, and they're, you know, doing that kind of thing. And I think as time went on, they started looking back, and this you know, that it's a sort of historical preservation thing. And to some of them, you know, they would go back, and in my opinion, you know, there's two kinds of releases. There was ones which did really well at the time, and so we would pick them up and want to re-release them, you know, find a new audience, whatever. And ones which didn't do as well as they should have at the time,
yeah,
you know, it might have come out 30 years ago, it might have been a bit of a sleeper, people might have missed it, and then, you know, so the director of catalog would pick it up and want to re-release it again, so it could find a new audience and stuff like that. There's a mix of everything like that, and then also something we call heritage acts, which are the more newer albums that we did. We did a lot of new albums, but they were generally by artists that either you would recognize, or artists that have been in bands before, you know, famous bands and stuff like that, that might have gone solo now, so they have a bit of a legacy behind them, yeah. Basically. And so, yeah, so that was, so that that's that mainly, you know, comprised what we were putting out. But only recently, in terms of Cherry Red history, we just bought a metal label called Dissonance Records, Dissonance, okay. Productions, and that was heavy metal, fresh metal label, and there's a lot of new artists on that label who are currently literally touring and making new albums, so we were putting out their new albums, basically. So it was
a mixed bag.
Always at Cherry Red, it's a mixed bag. I think it just keeps getting more mixed as well, basically, the more sort of they branch out and stuff like that. And yeah, it's hard to pigeonhole Cherry Red, because it's mostly known for its classic rock and prog, but then there's a lot of stuff that you just wouldn't expect us to put out, but we do.
And I think one of the great things that you guys do, and I do have the box sets that you guys put out there of artists who've been there, have been around for a long time. And I'll mention artists now, the Kim Wilde box set, I've got hers with, you know, the career retrospectives that you guys do,
yeah,
I think are completely so cool and so amazing. There's so much detail and so much care and so much, you know, knowledge planted into those different box sets. How do you choose who to do those box sets for, or do those artists come to you?
It's a strange one with Kim Wilde. I know what to do. How we choose the artists is usually what will happen is one of two things: is either the director of catalog, he'll acquire, you know, acquire some album or, you know, some catalog from somewhere, which will include the stuff, and then or alternatively we would license the stuff, you know. And so we, as I said before, we've got all these sub labels beneath us. We have, you know, for example, the Kim Wilde one is like Cherry Pop. And yes. Yeah, as I said, Dissonance is the metal one. And what you have for each of these labels, you have someone who's incredibly passionate about that type of music. I'm sure they're passionate about all types of music, but they would be very passionate about that type of music in general, and have an idea. They'd come up with an idea to, you know, I want to put out a Debbie Gibson box or something like that. And then we would go about, you would take that to the licensing, head of licensing who works there, and he would basically go about acquiring that stuff from another label, go about licensing it from another label, or alternatively, if the director of catalogs picks something up, it would then be given to a label manager of one of those labels, the most appropriate one, you know what I mean, and then go from there, essentially. But I never put any releases together, so I really couldn't tell you the thought process that goes into picking them. Yeah, do you know what I mean? I think as I said, it's, you know, these things don't happen in some sort of order.
Yeah,
they really sort of just spring up. In my opinion, from what I saw, okay. They were just springing up, you know, from all over the place. Like, oh, we got this. Oh, we're putting this out. Some kind of thing. It was, yeah. So.
Which makes it's so interesting, because it's all types of music, all types of genres, targeted to so many audiences, niche audiences, greater audiences. So it's about satisfying so many musical needs for so many listeners, actually, if you think about it.
Yeah, it really was a diverse audience. I spoke to a lot of people, you know, customers and stuff like that, and they really did span all genres, and Cherry Red does really well to be as diverse as possible in its output, and it goes to show, really. I think the love of the physical product is what unites all of them, which is what Cherry Red does. It's Cherry Red's sort of MO is, you know, putting out physical products, remastering stuff, you know, putting out a nice physical product for the present day, and hoping that people will enjoy it, basically. And yeah, I think once you've done that, people still love physical, which is great. So once you've got that established, you can just sort of get as experimental as you want with the output, and yeah, you know, see if it bites. So, I mean, obviously, not every single thing sells. Not every single thing is a massive hit. But you know, that's not with every label. That's going to be the case and stuff like that. So yeah, things differ. But
for me, I love my CDs. I love the booklets. I love holding something. I love the aesthetic of looking through the, you know, the pictures, the song lyrics, the
great,
the energy of that exchange. For me, is yes, I've got my Spotify account, but what happens is every now and then I go back into the playlist that I've created for my spinning classes, because I teach spinning, and songs.
Oh, wow!
Songs have disappeared. You know, songs have been removed, and I'm like, "Where's the song? It's now. I need to find other songs to replace it." Whereas if I've got the CD, it's always mine. It's a way of saying thank you to the artists for their hard work of creating the music, for the energy of it. It's an energy exchange. And that's what I love about the physical, especially in the CD space. I know CDs are making a comeback, cassettes are making a comeback, vinyls are already there. So it's great to know that people still want to hold on to something and have that experience of having something tangible.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that. I'm sure they would love you to hear you say that. Yeah, it's basically, it's, yeah, you're the exact kind of, that love of the physical. I mean, that, to me, always, it's just been the idea of having a collection. I mean, if you've got everything stored online, if everything's just on Spotify, you never get to sort of look at your collection. So this, you know, this is all the bits that I got, it's the bits I like, and I got this at this place, and you know, that sort of thing. I'm quite a big film guy. I was quite a big film guy, and one thing that always bothered me about it was just the changing technology. How you start a collection, and then, you know, 5-10 years later, there's something, the new format's out, and then you've got to restart the collection and stuff like that. So the fact that people are still putting out the older formats, and you know, your collections will always last there, then I think that's a great thing.
I'm going to put you on the spot now. I love this. So it's not necessarily your favorite, but five songs by artists that you love or listen to often to, or in this minute, because naturally, if I ask this question to you in half an hour's time, or an hour's time, or tomorrow's time, or 2 weeks' time, it'll be a different list. So your five favorite songs or songs by artists that are your go-to in this minute.
Okay, let's see. I'd say one is Take the Time by Dream Theater.
Dream Theater, okay, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. Second would probably be Roundabout by Yes.
Yeah.
Third, maybe the Way I Am by Eminem.
Okay, two more.
Let's see. That's quite a hard one to come up with on the spot. I'm trying to. Yeah. Let's see. Oh, Stash by Fish. Okay. That's something I'm listening to at the moment a lot. As you can tell, I like my prog quite a lot.
Yeah.
And I would say the last one would be Eastbound and Down by Jerry Reed.
Brilliant. Nice eclectic mix.
I like to think so. I quite like, I know I probably won't be a lot of people agreeing with me on the prog side and the countryside and even the old school hip hop side.
That's the beauty of having your own, it's your list. As a final message to our listeners that are listening to all around the world, what would you like to say?
I'd like to say, keep on listening to Barrett, and keep enjoying the music, keep purchasing, keep active, keep going to gigs, and yeah, to try not to take everything too seriously, because I know these are weird times around the world everywhere, but we're all in this together, and you know, the best thing we can do is treat ourselves well and take it easy and be good to each other.
Brilliant. Love it. So this is Celebs Rant, Barrett Edelstein, signing out.